Did you know that that is the second most observed sound in Minnesota on iNaturalist for the month of June?
No, I did not know that. What were we?
I don't know why you would, but a nerd like me would. That is the sound of the red-eyed vireo. And they are just prolific singers.
Okay.
Number one is the gray tree frog, which we've listened to a little bit on the frog episodes.
Yeah, but you. What does it sound like? Don't you have a mnemonic device for that one?
Yeah, it's okay. So the mnemonic device I have for that one, it's one of the screaming frogs. I think of the toads that do the and then just don't stop for a very, very long time. The gray tree frog does more of a much shorter.
Sure. Interrupted.
Yes. So I think of them as like a 3 second, 3 to 5 second long call. American toad is like longer than 10 seconds generally.
Okay.
So gray tree frog is the first with 108 sound observations in June in Minnesota. Red-eyed vireo is second. The Cope's gray tree frog, which you can distinguish by sound from the gray tree frog, is number third. Can I distinguish the two of them? No, I'm happy if it's a tree frog. The veery is fourth. And then we have the gray catbird.
Oh.
Which is the one that tricks people into thinking there's like a little kitten.
Oh, sure.
American robin is sixth. The common yellow throat, which people say it sounds like witchity, witchity, witchity. I think it sounds like, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? It's a little friend. The green frog, the mnemonic I have for that one is it sounds like it's playing like a badly tuned banjo.
Kermit. Kind of Kermit plunk. Frog. Kermit the frog. Mm-hmm. You got someone walking in on you? Sorry.
No, there's just so I'm at the library recording today. Okay. And there are people moving. And every time people move, you know, I must look at them
there
because
we go.
Danger. A human. Song Sparrow is number nine. And they have kind of like a three-part song. And then American Redstart is number 10.
We, just yesterday, I was hearing the hoo-hoo, who cooks for you?
Yeah.
Coming from the island across the lake from us.
Uh-huh.
Just.
Do you remember which owl?
Echoing. Bard.
Very nice.
Lovely, lovely sound. Also, we've been working on our, both Tom and I, working on the dragonflies, the chalk-fronted corporal.
Nice.
That
good.
Is so hard of words to memorize for some reason. I try to think military. Yep. I got to think like teacher chalkboard. Chad Kaditz. Mm-hmm. Chalk.
Mm.
Chad Kaditz in the military. How's that? Hope you're listening, Chad Kaditz.
Chalk. And that's how you remember.
Yep.
Or you just name it like CFC.
Oh,
it sounds kind of like KFC.
Okay.
Yeah, just shorten them.
Sure.
Or give them different names.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know. I have a plant that I can never remember the name of that I've just started calling SpongeBob SquarePants because it's two compound words right next to each other. It's the,
If only people could see the steam coming out of Charlie's ears right now.
I know. It's hurting me. Hold on.
I will say, as you think, this is the Season Watch Pod. I'm Heidi Holton with Charlie Mitchell. Weekly, a podcast, and you hear us on KEXE, and it's about the delights and the curiosities of nature. You got it?
Indeed. I got it. So the SpongeBob SquarePants plant is actually called Catchweed Bedstraw, but it has kind of the same rhythm.
Sure, sure. There you go.
And it's the one that, like, it has very Velcro-y leaves. It gets stuck to your pants as you're walking through the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Hence, Catchweed. And then it's kind of like lays low on the ground, hence bedstraw. Can I remember the name of it? Clearly, no. I had to just type in bedstraw into my computer to figure out the rest of it. It's the SpongeBob SquarePants.
There we go.
Plant.
Chalk-fronted corporal. Right? Chalk-fronted corporal. Mm-hmm. That's it. Chalk-fronted corporal.
Yep.
Dragonfly?
CFC.
Okay. CFC. Mm-hmm. I did see one. I don't think it was the chalk-fronted corporal. It didn't have the white on there. So I saw just more of a black one, but it was fleeting. It wouldn't stop. I was talking to the dragonfly, and it was not stopping for me. It was very busy at work.
Come on, man.
I know. I was trying. So I'm still working on it. So many things, the delights of nature right now. What's it like at your place? What are you seeing, Charlie?
Oh, yeah, it's really good. the hummingbirds at our place have been going nuts. They're going through, we do like 4 cups of nectar mm-hmm. into our hummingbird, and they go through it every day. By the next morning, it needs to be refilled. I was just mystified because at one point I could see 9 hummingbirds around this feeder that only has 5 holes. So they're all dive bombing and, rah, 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 and not a single male in sight. And so I was like, is this one female and all of her babies? How many baby hummingbirds does a, like one female have? I looked it up. Normally it's between 1 or 2 eggs. Well, it's 1 or 2 eggs. I doubt many of them lay an egg and a half. And like very rarely they'll lay 3. So this is multiple families coming to the feeder, just like a male that happens to have 9 females in its territory. But every time that male shows up, it can barely get a sip in before it's chased off by all these others. So I don't know how many families are coming to the feeder, but it's really fun to see. I have been, that bug net that I have for catching moths has been tempting me how much I want to hold a little hummingbird in my hand.
Oh boy. I don't think, again, we're getting to legalities here.
Yes, we are. And I'm worried that like it would panic and because their little hearts go so fast. I don't want to scare it to death. So I'm not going to. But the self-control it's taking is a lot.
I appreciate that. We mm-hmm. too have the hummingbirds. I love, you know, the sound of those. And I'm on the bird feeder duty and they are going through everything so fast. I do not know how these squirrels are walking a tightrope because we have it up high in the tree on a pulley system, mm-hmm. right? And but they mm-hmm. somehow they're whipping around, they can do it. So I'm having to fill these a lot because there's so many mm-hmm. birds. We've put a new one on as Tom is not able to be outside as much, right on the window, and we're getting finches when the blue jay doesn't show up, you know.
Okay.
Got some thistle in there mm-hmm. for them. That's been a lot of fun. But under that pulley system of a feeder, you know, we have it up high so that we're not tempting the bears. Because mm-hmm. Andy Try has said this, you know, and it's his beef with Latimer is mm-hmm. taking your bird feeder, which he's doing.
Latimer's feeding the bears, yes.
But one day over the weekend, Charlie, one of the most amazing things happened. Coming from our basement, I heard bear. And I was like, what? Because I haven't heard that in our house, right? And he said it again. And I thought he said pair. So I'm thinking like it's a pair of geese or it's a pair of herons that are out there or something. And he's like, no, bear. And then he's coming up the stairs. It's under that feeder. We're standing up on this. We both stood up on this bench so we could watch it. And mm-hmm. it was so cool. It was so pretty. It wasn't very big. And I actually reached out to Andy Try and told him, like, I see you, man. I see why you're into these bears. This is amazing. And he's like, I said, we saw a tag. And he's like, what color is the tag? And I didn't remember. So I asked Tom. He said it was a yellow tag. And then Andy knew because he's like, I can tell you more about it if you tell me about the tag.
This is Andy Try, the bear guy, who's the DNR bear biologist, just in case our listeners don't know for some reason.
Somehow I am blessed to know people that will tell you things like that, right? So mm-hmm. we tell him it's a yellow one, a yellow tag. He says...
Heidi is consulting her phone. I assume that you are just texting with Andy Try the Bear Guy, which is...
Emailing, yes. Not
emailing, okay.
Yeah, I could text him, but I didn't know if that was going to be too much.
I just love that we have a bear guy we can reach out to. The dream.
Also the recipient of this year's Harry Hutchins Conservation Award from the KEXE annual meeting.
I finally got to meet him.
Oh my
God. It was lovely.
There's some photos of Andy getting that award mm-hmm. and what a guy.
I learned he is very tall.
Oh boy, is he tall, especially next to someone like me. Okay, so as emails do, they don't come in the right order. He said, we told him it was a yellow tag about the size of a quarter. He said that's probably a bear that Wildlife Services accidentally trapped. So I write back, accidentally? How does that happen? And he says they were resolving a wolf or coyote situation and he was an accidental catch. Quite the information.
Okay, so does this mean that like there was a paw trap or something that can catch multiple species?
I don't know. But anyway.
I'm very intrigued.
So we're watching this beautiful bear, right? And it is we're just both just kind of yelling, you know, but also trying to be quiet. We're inside, but somehow we don't want to even bother the bear at all. And it starts to walk off. And this is the part that I could not stop laughing at, because it's on a hill, you know, kind of our, it's kind of steep, but for an animal, they can easily walk down, you know, the, and Tom has built, you know, steps in the middle of this mm-hmm. hill. It walked over to the steps to walk down the steps to the lake. It was one
I mean,
the,
if there's an easy path, who wouldn't take it?
It was so cool. And then it was about 9:30 at night. So, of course, I had to text my neighbors because it was headed down the lake shore to possibly their places, too. But they were not able to see it. But anyway, that was exciting. I always figured there were bears around us, but I had not seen one before.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
See, that's really interesting to me because you're well within black bear range.
Mm-hmm.
I am on at least what's understood to be like the southern end of Black Bear Range. But the DNR is now expanding it because they've moved. But we get black bears all the time. And they come to my feeder, which is hanging like right outside our living room window. And of course they come in late at night when you're well asleep and I'm still up because I'm a night owl.
Right.
And trying to get to our feeder. And every time they get our feeder, they also pull down this pole.
Oh, sure.
And it gets bent, and then you have to go buy a new one. It's a whole thing. And also, you're feeding the bears. So the number of times that I have, like, run outside yelling at this bear that's only 10 feet away from me. And the good thing is they are really scared of humans.
Yeah.
And they always run off. But do I remember from one of those Andy Try conversations whether you can tell the age of a bear by the size of its ears?
I wouldn't doubt it, but I can't confirm nor deny that.
Okay. My memory says that bears are born with like the same size ears that they have as adults. So a really little bear is going to have comparatively really big ears.
Oh.
One of the big, chonky adult bears is going to have these little tiny ears.
Sure. Just a note to confirm what Charlie thought they remembered about bears. Wildlife biologists like the Minnesota DNR's bear project leader, Andy Try, note that ear size is a reliable non-scientific indicator of bear age. Large, prominent ears that stick up relative to a small head indicate a young bear, 1 to 2 years old, while small, widely spaced ears on a large, broad head indicate a mature adult, 5 years or older. This was about like the height, as I described it to John Latimer, the height of his dog, so a black lab.
Okay. They're always smaller than I think they're going to be, at least down here.
Yeah. And the fur looked just shiny and amazing. Oh, yes. It was so fun.
Isn't their fur amazing? How well it just absorbs light? Yeah. It's like they're little voids.
Yeah. It was so much fun. Hey, we had so many people, as can be expected, texting in during Tuesday's morning show on KXC that is chock full of nature, including our friend Noah in Brit. He said, good morning from the homestead. Haven't texted in a while. Just been busy with the garden, bears, and beehives. On the topic of turtles, we were talking about some people were sending in photos and telling us, bragging really, that they were saving turtles, mm-hmm. which is good for them. He says, I would agree that I haven't seen as many painted turtles. That was a question that John had, compared to the last few years. But on the other hand, I was in the Boundary Waters a couple weeks ago, and there was a dozen, probably more, painted turtles all over the place near the campsite, digging and laying eggs. It was amazing. They were crawling everywhere. Had a fawn trot through the clover here about 30 minutes ago, right as he's texting. Bees are buzzing everywhere you look, something amazing waiting to be seen.
Well, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is amazing. Like the there are spots where there are turtles all over, and there are other spots where they're more rare. And if you're there at the right time during the right weather, they will just flood. When I was at turtle camp, I feel like so many of, you know, you'd like make fun of kids who went to band camp as a kid because they'd always tell band camp stories.
Hey.
Sorry.
Well, no, actually mine was worse. It was yearbook camp. So, but keep talking.
Oh, that is very, very Heidi Holton of
you. And it's worse, is it not? Yeah. Okay.
But to be fair, Turtle Camp is very, very Charlie Mitchell of me.
Oh, okay.
So mm-hmm. we found our brand and we're sticking to it.
Yep.
When I was at Turtle Camp, we would be there from end of May to end of June. And every hour from 5 a.m. until like a little bit after sunset, we would go and check this campground for any nesting turtles. And every hour on the hour, at least four of us would just do this transect of this campground to see if there are any nesting turtles. And like during peak laying season, some nights we would get 10 or 12, and some nights it would be 30 within 2 or 3 hours, just because it was raining and the turtles would just storm the beaches.
Wow.
Normandy. It was chaos during those nights.
Couple questions. You were at a yes. turtle camp for about a month. Is that what you're telling me?
Mm-hmm. Every summer.
How old were you?
Oh, this is during grad school.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm imagining like a 9-year-old Charlie gone for a month at a turtle camp. And I was like, wow. That's okay. I get it now.
To be fair, there's not that much of a difference between a 9-year-old Charlie sure. and a 35-year-old Charlie.
Exactly.
But yes.
It seemed very, very specific for a kid camp.
Yes.
But
yes.
wonderful nonetheless. We also are getting a lot of people who are texting in. It was our friend from Boston. Liberty is her name. She texted in this week saying mm-hmm. Boston has a healthy population of white gray squirrels, but they're not albino. They've made the front page of our newspaper. As I was trying to find the picture of 5 of them in a tree, I looked over and I saw this little friend. Always makes my day when I see one.
That's awesome. And a white squirrel. There it is.
Yeah. And John,
yeah, gray squirrels are fascinating. Variability in their coat colors.
Well, and John was talking about it's an albino if the eyes are red. But mm-hmm. so people always assume if it's white, it is an albino. But he was like, I don't quite know why. But he goes, then again, gray squirrels are fascinating. They're gray or they're black. And he goes, and they can be white. But then again, gray is black and white. So maybe that makes some sense. Who knows?
Yeah, I'd have to look really closely at a actually gray squirrel pelt to see if it is just a mix of white and black hairs or if they are actually gray hairs.
And you might do that, mm-hmm. I think. You've noted that, it seems like.
Well, there's plenty of roadkill gray squirrels for me to observe, so yeah. I'll keep you posted. The wind's Heidi.
It's an exciting time. And of course, we're going to always, since we don't have as many students who are reporting, we really need you to help us out. Tell us about the amazing things that you are seeing. Leave us a voice memo through SpeakPipe. Who are we going to hear from next year, Charlie?
Our friends at the Bell Museum camps. This is a summer camp run through the, watch me remember, North Central Research and Outreach. No, yes, Research and Outreach Center.
NICROC.
Hi, this is Jack. I work with Bell Museum Camps. This week, we just held our first camp of the summer. The camp was a biology-themed camp with students from Upward Bound. And we held this camp at the North Central Research Center, so we were also able to explore the bog during this camp. After we explored the bog, the campers were tasked to sketch and journal about what they saw. And here's their report on that excursion.
Hello, my name is Abby. I'm going into 11th grade, and on June 9th, I went to the bog with our Upward Bound group. I saw many different organisms, including mushrooms, pitcher plants, and felt some soft moss. The weather was very sunny, with temperatures hitting 80 degrees, so it was pretty hot, but I had a lot of fun.
Hey, my name is Artemis. The other day, on June 9th, me and my class went on a bog walk. The bog was very eventful, seeing many different things. Our class saw lots of lady slippers along with lots of moss. The moss had a nice spongy texture along with a cooler temperature. We saw blueberries and blackberries, though unfortunately they weren't ripe. I very much enjoyed the whimsical feel of the bog. I do recommend taking a trip down in your free time.
Hi, my name is Marley from Big Fork. I'm going to be a senior in the upcoming school year. Out on the bog trail, we spotted a bunch of different and unique plants and animals. A couple of plants I have recorded inside my journal are a red-ringed mushroom growing on a fallen tree, our carnivorous pod plant flower, a couple bushes of unripe blueberries, a cotton ball grass. They look like the Lorax trees, but white. I was the first one to spot a lady slipper. And last but not least, I have a dogwood flower. They're little white flowers with a yellow bud in the middle. Thank you for listening to BeGap about plants.
Hello, my name is Robin. I'm heading into 12th grade and I go to Northland Community School. This past Tuesday, my Upward Bound peers and I took a trip into a bog near the North Central Research Center. It was genuinely one of the best experiences of my life because the diversity of plants was amazing. I saw carnivorous pitcher plants, pink lady slippers, and a ton of moss. The entire floor was nothing but moss. That's all I have to report. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm from Grand Rapids. I'm going to be a sophomore this upcoming year. And this Tuesday, we went down to the bog on this site. It was pretty cool. We got to see some unique stuff. We got to see some lady slippers, some carnivorous pitcher plants. It was a new sight, I'd say. Got to see some cool mushrooms, fungi. Other than that, it's just pretty cool all about.
Pretty cool all about. I agree. That is a good summary of the bog. Yeah, I love the way that, like, our student phenologists describe things. Like, I pulled out, it's whimsical. The bog is whimsical. One of the students said, thanks for listening to me yap about plants. If that isn't directly from John Latimer's mouth. And then, genuinely one of the best experiences of my life because of the diversity of plants in the bog. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And one of those students was from Grand Rapids and, like, just met a pitcher plant. Wow. You guys are within bog country.
And listen, I have not been to that bog out behind Nickrock. I don't know why. I used to work in that building. We were right across from Nickrock when KEXE in the early days.
Yeah, it was just...
Yeah, and it had the bog walk there. But something that I got to do. I got to put it on my list. We're talking about that all week as our question of the week about what are the things we should know about in small towns that, you know, aren't just known, you know, if you live in that town. So if someone's driving through, like, hey, stop at the campus. There's a bog walk here at Minnesota North Itasca. And, you know, we want to know about some of those things. Sometimes it's stuff like what's the best parade? Who throws out the best candy? So we'd love for you to tell us about northern Minnesota or wherever you might be listening from. This is the time of the year where people are getting ready for celebrations as the 4th of July is almost upon us. And we love hearing from you. You could leave a speak pipe, too. I think that'd be really cool for someone to do. Leave a voice memo.
Yes, please. Leave us a voice memo. Up next is going to be our friends at Roots and Wings Forest School.
This is the Adventures from Roots and Wings Forest School reporting from Glendale State Park. On June 17th, I saw an egg on a milkweed plant from a butterfly.
I saw a white admiral butterfly on a plant.
I saw a bluish purplish butterfly flying.
I saw bird feathers and I think the bird died and then another bird took it up a tree and ate it and the feathers fell on the ground. The colors were orange and white and black.
I saw a gray squirrel chasing a black squirrel.
I saw a chipmunk on the tree.
I saw an American toad.
On the trail, I saw a spring fetchling flower.
I saw some timothy grass on the trail.
I saw horse tails.
I saw yellow flowers called ragwort.
Thanks for listening. Stay wild.
I'm so happy to have Roots and Wings Forest School back. And I just looked it up. The Explorers program, according to our website, is for ages 6 through 10.
Oh, my
God. I'm always curious about, because they just sound so much younger than some of our other phonologists.
Even if they are not knowing, because we had heard high school students before that were at with the Bell Museum camp. Even if they don't have that level of specificity, they're noticing purplish, bluish, the way that they are like, this is different. This is what I saw. And you could tell everybody was like, wanted to tell us about something different they saw from the person before them. You know,
it's absolutely
great.
Just wait until next week. They're noticing some very specific things. I just got the email from Leona Sitchi, who's the teacher there. And they found something that I only discovered last year. There are these tiny orange aphids that are called oleander aphids. They're bright orange with little black legs that grow, that unless you look really close, I had to get like my little hand lens up to them. They just look like a kind of green lichen almost growing on, or not green, an orange lichen growing on the side of a stem. Amazing observations.
Wow.
10 out of 10.
As always, our guy here reporting, John Latimer, our chief staff phenologist, talking about moths and butterflies this week.
Couple of notes about butterflies and moths. This past week, I saw white admiral, I saw mourning cloaks, I saw monarchs, I saw tiger swallowtails, lots of all of those. And I saw a cecropia moth. And the cecropia moth is one of our largest moths. And some of the females of the cecropia group can have 5 to 7 inch wingspan. That's as big as a bird. The really interesting part about the cecropia moth is that the body, the wings are brown. They have these startling white and red sort of patterns on them. But the really amazing thing about the cecropia moth is the body and the legs. And if you look at the body and the legs, you'll see that they're striped red and white and just really astonishingly brilliant and very, very cool to look at. Now, the cecropia moths are out now, but will be disappearing very soon. They are May and June, and then they're done. They'll lay their eggs, and those eggs will become caterpillars, and those caterpillars will overwinter. And the cecropia moths will emerge again next spring. The interesting thing about the cecropia moth is that, as an adult, it has no mouth parts. All of its energy comes from whatever it ate as a caterpillar. When it becomes an adult moth, it has no mouth parts to eat with. It lives for about a week and breeds and lays eggs on maples, cherry, birch, those kinds of trees. And then the caterpillars will munch away until fall, and then they'll make a cocoon, and they will pupate during that winter and come out in the other side as the beautiful cecropia moth. And finally, monarchs. And I got a text from Dr. Ed up in Big Fork, and he wondered, he had been watching the monarchs, and he noticed that occasionally one monarch butterfly would attack and grab another monarch butterfly, and then they would sort of fight and struggle in the air and then fall to the ground or fall to a branch somewhere. And he wondered who was whom in that fight. And it works out like this. The male monarchs, when they find a female, they will grapple with her. They will fly out and grab her in the air, and they will grapple with her and fall to the ground. And oftentimes they'll chase this female around. And while they're doing this, they're sort of assessing the female's fitness for mating. And once they have established that this female is fit for mating, they will grapple with her and they will fall to the ground. The two will join at the abdomen, and he will pass to her a packet of not only his sperm, but a bunch of nutrients as well. And the bigger his dowry, the stronger it makes the female. And the stronger she is, the better chance of survival she has and her offspring have. So this grappling that you see is a male picking a female after some flight. And then he gives up a great deal. He gives up like 25% of his energy when he mates with her. And that usually results in his not too imminent death, but he dies shortly after that. And she goes on to lay her eggs, and then she dies. So a little story about the monarchs.
I was not expecting monarch butterflies to be martial artists necessarily, but apparently wrestling, very important for a monarch,
I guess. So this has been the Season Watch pod. You hear it every week. One of the exciting things is now coming out on the podcast starting next week, you'll get a full phenology report from John Latimer from our Tuesday morning show. We're excited to tell you that. So we want to thank the folks behind this program this week.
Absolutely. Our red-eyed vireo call was recorded by Larry Servio on June 1st of 2020 in Washington County. Bell Museum campers, of course, sent in their phenology talk back. Roots and Wings Forest School as always, our friend John Latimer.
Let's take a listen to that red-eyed vireo again.
I always feel like it's asking questions and then answering them again. It's like, hello, how are you? What you doing? How about that?
Support for Season Watch Podcast comes from the Sugar Lake Lodge near Grand Rapids, a Northwoods setting on the shores of Sugar Lake, offering lodge rooms, cabins, and golf villas, with on-site dining, a golf course, and access to the lake, trails, and seasonal outdoor recreation throughout the year. Plan your stay at sugarlakelodge.com.